The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
If you're listening right now, hold on to your hat, because some of you know I've had on this program the folks who wrote a book about Kermit Gosnell. He is, without question, the most prolific serial killer in the history of the United States. It's horrific, but very few people know the story. He was a late-term abortionist working in the Philly area. It is a gruesome, gruesome story. He is behind bars right now. But the folks who wrote the book are part of a movie. They've made a movie on this important story. It is a very important story, which is why I hope you'll listen, get the details, because you probably won't believe them unless you hear them from the people who actually wrote the book. I have them on the line now. Ann and Phelim, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks so much, Eric.
Well, I love you both. You have done, you've really done God's work in telling this story. Now, the most important question I'm going to ask you, Ann, is how to pronounce your last name?
McElhenney.
McElhenney? How would
you? Yeah, that's perfect.
Why should I take your word for it? McElhenney. McElhenney.
That's the one.
And Phelim McAleer.
And very good.
You sound like an
Eric Metaxas.
You sound like a couple of Irish sons of guns. Really, I love the two of you because you live your passion, to use one of the cliches of our day. But you use your skills as journalists to tell these important stories. So for somebody who doesn't know anything about the story of Kermit Gosnell, obviously the movie is just coming out now. It's an important movie. I hope people will go see it desperately. I hope that. It's why I wanted to have you on for this hour. But tell us, Ann and Phelim, what are the basics? Give us a thumbnail sketch in case somebody's just tuning in. They say, I've never heard of this.
So Kermit Gosnell is go on ahead, Phelim. We're not in the same spot, so this will be it. Go ahead, Phelim.
You go ahead, Duran.
This is a picture.
Kermit Gosnell, we're married. So this could get very.
I was just going to say this is such. It's a picture of a marriage. It's like, no, you go, darling. No, you go. No, go ahead. You go. Go ahead.
Kermit Gosnell is an abortion doctor who is serving 3 life sentences in a prison in Pennsylvania for delivering babies alive and then cutting their necks with scissors. And he did this for 30 years with impunity because the establishment who want to protect abortion did nothing about all the warning signs, even though, and in fact, 2 women died in his clinic and they still did nothing. So the movie is actually about the trial, the investigation and the trial. We show nothing gory. It's not at all like that. It's a lot like a Law and Order episode. But this is what Kermit Gosnell did. And a jury, of pro-abortion people, actually, not pro-life people, convicted him of murder for doing that. And the film brings up a lot of questions about how did he get away with it for so long? Why would a governor, Governor Tom Ridge, a Republican governor, a Catholic, have allowed this to happen during his time as governor? And in fact, why was it that same governor said hands off the abortion clinics, which was part of the reason why Gosnell wasn't discovered earlier? There's an awful lot of questions that this story brings up, and not the least of which is how did the media ignore that this happened once the story did break and was in the courts in Philadelphia? How it is that most of the people in the country have never heard of Kermit Gosnell's name.
Well, we're living in very divided times, and this is the horror. In other words, if you want to know how divided they are, even when someone does things as horrific, as gruesome as this man did, if it somehow falls under the rubric of abortion, nobody wants to know the facts. And in this case, because we do have laws in this country, we were forced to deal with the facts. And this man, as you said, is now behind bars serving three life sentences. I mean, this is an amazing thing. So what precisely was this butcher convicted of that he is now behind bars for three lifetimes, if that were possible?
Well, he's, you know, he's convicted of murder, murdering babies. He's also killing his patients. You know, he ran an abortion clinic that was a grand jury in Philadelphia, and I'm sure a grand jury in Philadelphia has seen a lot. They called it a house of horrors. But he was allowed to do this. The bodies were, I mean, it's a cliche to say the bodies were piling up, but they actually were literally piling up in his basement. The dead women were coming out of his clinic, but the authorities didn't want to do anything. And I, you know, we made a movie about it. I want to tell people, look, it's not gory. It's not a horror movie. It's a courtroom drama. It's about the trial. It's about how you go from being this man being a protected species to detectives, good detectives and good lawyers, realizing this is not right, there's something wrong here, and fighting against the political backlash, the media backlash, to bring justice to his victims who are voiceless.
If people want to know about the movie, just so, because people tune in and out of radio programs, they can go to gosnellmovie.com. Gosnell is G-O-S-N-E-L-L, gosnellmovie.com. What made you think, the two of you, that a movie needed to be made about this? You wrote a tremendous book about it. I know the book did very well, and people who are interested in the book, I would recommend highly that they get a copy of the book for all the details. Movies can never give those kinds of details. But what persuaded you to make a movie?
You know, nothing succeeds like a movie in reaching a very wide audience. You know, not everyone reads books. They don't have time, or they just don't like reading. Even documentaries are something that a lot of people, you know, don't really like to watch. And we actually thought, you know what's really popular? You know, the crime genre is very, very popular in the United States. A lot of TV shows are about crime. And here's an incredible crime story that really happened. And it's a true, you know, it's true crime. And, you know, at the center of it is a very impressive investigation, you know, as Phelan said, with, you know, this amazing cop, Jim Wood, at the very center of the story. And then, you know, followed up very closely by the assistant district attorneys, two women, really, who investigate this story and put this guy behind bars. That's very much the attraction.
And Phelan, did you direct this movie?
No. Well, we produced it. No, Nick Searcy, the veteran actor Nick Searcy, directed it. You know, you probably know Nick from Justified, the TV series, but also Nick was an actor in The Shape of Water. He was also in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And he was in, you know, he's been in basically every movie, you know, every big movie the last 20 years. So he approached us and he said, "This is what he wants to do." This.
Wow.
He felt like this was something that he could do, and really this was designed for him. So he's done a great job. You know, thank God I didn't direct it. You know, as a journalist, I would have been too concerned with, you know, making sure that all everything is, you know, is told exactly, chronological. You know, but Nick has brought, he's kept the story true, but he's brought real artistry and real direction to it, and told a great story, and that's very important. We want this to be accessible to people. I mean, as you say, our book was a bestseller, but, you know, that is still a limited audience in America. But a true crime drama in America, sure, you know, everyone watches that. You know, if you watch, you know, Law and Order, you'll love this.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, to tell a story like this, it is a gruesome story, but you don't need to show the horror. You can imply it. And there have been many films that have dealt with abortion in more oblique ways. This is, of course, before Roe v. Wade, the thing became hot button, and movies don't touch it anymore. But there was a time when you could do that. The movie Alfie with Michael Caine and Shelley Winters, brilliant movie from 1966, It deals with an abortion, and it is just one of those things I will never forget it. They don't show anything, but it just conveys the horror. Listen, you've written an amazing book. What is the title of the book?
So the book is called Gosnell, The Untold Story of America's Most Prolific Serial Killer.
Okay.
And the movie is called Gosnell, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer.
Okay. It's such an important story, and I know it's opening all across America as we speak. I want to make sure that people understand that sometimes we have an obligation to see what is happening in our name. This is happening in America. There are other Gosnells out there who have not yet been exposed. And I think people, and especially young people, need to see this. In World War II, when we defeated the Nazis, one thing that U.S. troops did, U.S. Military leaders, forced the local populations to come into the death camps and to see what had been done in their name. They forced them to see it so that they couldn't say, "I didn't know." They would be forced to know. Now, in this country, we can't force people to watch this movie, but I want to say, folks, if you're a parent, you really ought to bring your teenagers to see what is happening in America so that they can't say, "Oh, I don't know." We need to understand what is happening. And this movie does as good a job as anything out there in showing what has been happening. It is absolutely horrifying. And I want to say congratulations to both of you for persisting with this, because this is a big thing to write a book like this, to do the research. And I know, Anne, because we've spoken on this program before, it's heartbreaking for you when you encountered the horrors. Tell my audience, for those who haven't heard you on this program before, what it was that led you to tell this story.
You know, at the very center, I it's interesting that you mentioned the Holocaust, actually, because I often say to people that, you know, with this abortion story, you know, 60 million plus children that have died in America, it's very hard for people to kind of get their heads around that. And in some ways, I think of our film, in some ways, we do a little bit of what Steven Spielberg did in Schindler's List, where, you know, you remember that they had this sepia-tinted, kind of washed-out, monochromatic colors,
right.
Except for this one part. I think there's actually two parts with colors. I think there's flowers as well. But there's a little girl wearing a red coat, and you see her being led away by a Nazi officer. And then later, much later in the film, you see that coat once more, and that's in a mass grave. And I think by personalizing it, by going into the very detail of one life that was lost, this film does go some way to do the same thing, because at the center of the movie is a story about one child who had died there, Baby Boy A, who was called Baby Boy A, and who, you know, audiences get to hear about and know about. You know, Gosnell joked about him and all of that. But he got immortalized because two of the staff had taken photographs of him. And, you know, you ask about me personally, that baby shares a birthday with my own father. That baby was born on July the 12th. And, you know, my mother used to talk about the hand of God, but I do think it's kind of extraordinary in all the days in the year that would be the birthday of this child who born and died on the same day. But two of the workers took a photograph of him, and their testimony during the trial and in interviews with us subsequently, you know, are very life-changing, I would say. I mean, Adrian Moten, who is one of the people who took a photograph, was asked, you know, I asked her, I said to her, you know, God, it must be awful to get arrested, you know. And she said, I wasn't arrested. I was rescued. And she was asked also, you know, why had she taken a photograph? Why did you do that? Why did you take a photograph of him? And, you know, and she said, I thought he could have had a chance. He was so big, I thought he could have had a chance. And you know, how anyone could listen to testimony like that was given under oath by someone standing who had watched this child live and try to breathe and try to, you know, try to survive. And he struggled. And the other person who took a photograph of him, Karima Cross, described, she was asked, I mean, you know, the idea that this wasn't newsworthy, by the way, is beyond me, but she was actually asked, Karima Cross was asked to stand up and show the jury how the baby moved, how he had moved, and how he had actually curled himself up to try to protect himself, because babies of that age, little people like that, who are like seven months in gestation age, you know, he'd be cold and the light would be very harsh. and he had made this movement, and she was asked, and she stood up and made that movement. I mean, the only thing that you could possibly come to compare this to is the Holocaust, and people do need to know. And it is personal, and it becomes personal when we worked on the book for a really long time. We know, you know, the details of everyone who gave testimony to the life of this child, and even his mother, actually, who spoke at the trial. And I think the film will go a long way to immortalizing his life. And Phelan says a really wonderful thing, actually, about baby boy A, that, you know, that a person can live a really long life, that you could live to be a big age and never do anything significant in your life. Well, this child has already done something significant, even though he lived a very short time. He has literally melted hearts and changed hearts and changed hard hearts. I told the story of baby boy A in Erie, Pennsylvania, where a woman had brought her teenage child who was pro-choice and very hard-hearted, and who changed from just knowing the baby and knowing the life of baby boy A, because at the center of it, he was murdered, but he could totally legitimately have been killed if he had been killed in the womb. So you know, it's stories like that that we tell in this film that I think are significant, and the reason why we did it.
Well, I have to say that you know, the two of you have done tremendous journalism in telling this larger story. But I'm friends with Molly Hemingway and with Kirsten Powers, both of whom I remember advocating very strongly on Twitter that mainstream media cover this. Now, these are two women who believe in the sanctity of the unborn because of their Christian faith. One is politically liberal, one is politically conservative, but they both pushed and pushed. And I want to remind people that your voice counts. You have to speak up. And I want to say to pastors who are listening or parents, you need to bring youth groups to this. I don't know what age would be appropriate, but it seems to me that teenagers need to understand what is happening in America, what has happened, and what the mainstream media, because they are in bed with the abortion industry, they sweep it under the rug. It is the scandal of our time. We are very happy to talk about scandals of the past. This is the scandal of our time. I think we're going to look back on this and we're going to be horrified and we're going to wonder, why didn't we do something? Well, I guess I want to say to my listeners, see the movie, tell your friends about the movie. You can go to gosnellmovie.com. And do we know how many theaters this is opening in, Anne and Phelan?
It's going to be opening in about 700 across the nation. And I mean, I would say to people, when it opens, you know, I think a lot of conservatives tend to go to the movies later and wait a week or two. You cannot wait a week or two. Hollywood wants to close this movie down. We've worked really hard to get into these 700 theaters. We need everyone to turn out with a big bang at the weekend. The mainstream media are going to do their best to ignore this film, to suppress it, to censor it. The figures are going to speak for themselves. If we can get in the top five or the top 10 movies across the United States with a big bang on the opening weekend, it'll become impossible to ignore. And in fact, it'll become a real story that we were successful without the mainstream media, just as we were successful in raising the money without the mainstream media, just as we were successful in making the movie without the mainstream media, and just as we were successful, you know, in telling, and just as citizen journalists like Molly Hemingway and Kirsten Powers were shamed the mainstream media into telling the story. You know, these are great women. These are great journalists. These are true journalists who care about the truth, and shamed and forced other journalists to tell the truth.
Well, we all know the names. Go ahead, sorry.
Just on the point you had mentioned there, Eric, actually, you know, we got a PG-13 rating for this film. And I would say, you know, with total confidence, people can bring very young teenagers of all ages to see this film because, you know, it's very important that they see it because they're the ones that matter most, really, to this story. So don't hesitate to bring you know, a young teenager to it. And the other thing people can do is go to gosnellmovie.com. If a theater near you is not showing it, get in touch with the manager.
Hey, I'm talking to Anne McElhenney and Phelan McAleer. They are the folks who put together the story of Gosnell, America's biggest serial killer. It is now a movie. You can find out more at gosnellmovie.com. It goes into theaters October 12th, and it is imperative, folks, that we get out, and especially that we bring young kids. I hope that if you have a youth group in your church, that you will try to get them to see this. I mean, this is so important that we know what is happening in our name in the United States of America. Anne and Phelim, I have to ask you, in the casting of this movie, do you have Dean Cain? Am I getting this right?
Yes, actually, yes. Yeah, no, we have Dean Cain, and we have Nick Searcy as Phelim said, and we have Michael Beach, who's another amazing actor. And we've got Sarah Jane Morris in one of the other lead roles. We've an amazing cast.
There was a rumor that you got Charlize Theron to play Dr. Gosnell. No?
Yeah.
Because she likes to take on challenging parts like that, and you didn't get Charlize Theron.
Eric, that is cultural appropriation or racism or something like
that.
Are you sure it's not
Charlize Theron? Because I know that she likes to take on these really difficult, meaty parts, that she's not just another pretty face. You're sure? All right, listen, you guys, you're the producers, so you would know. But I'm just telling you, I heard a rumor, it's Charlize Theron, and I'm gonna spread the rumor. You can't blame me.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
We actually have Earl Billings playing Gosnell, and everyone who's seen the movie and in our pre-screenings has said that they just think Earl is fabulous. And people will remember Earl Billings. He was the Affleck guy for many years, and he's just a great character actor and does an amazing job.
Well, I mean, I can't think of a more difficult role to play than this monster. Now, you talk about Gosnell being, you say, and this is often the case with people who have allowed genuine satanic evil into their lives, that they can be very charming. It's very creepy, really, the idea that somebody who's done horrors unimaginable, murdering babies by snipping their necks with scissors, one of the most gruesome things imaginable, but he seems to be very jolly and cheerful, and what a strange thing.
Yeah, but he's he's got that Hannibal Lecter type of personality. He smiles, he has this very mellifluous voice, very soft voice, very charming. We've met him. We've been in the prison with him, and he sang to me twice. You know, very, very, very creepy.
Why did he sing to you?
Talks about his feet a lot and all of this, kind of really odd.
Why did he sing to you? I don't understand.
So he, you know, I was asking him about music because he had a whole thing about Chopin, and he was saying that, that he was really grateful for the time that suddenly, because he's in prison now, he has more time to listen to music, and he listened to the Met. And then he said, when he's discovered Jacques Brel, the famous, Belgian crooner who a lot of your listeners would know very well and remember very well. And he said, and the lovely song, I love that song, and he then had a brain freeze, couldn't remember the really famous song by Jacques Brel. And I said, Nimakite Pa, which is the really famous one. And then he, burst into song, leaning into my face and singing, Don't Ever Leave Me. Super creepy. And he sang that song. And then at another stage, I was asking him about the high school he had attended in Philadelphia. And he started singing their school anthem.
He seems to crave attention. There are people like that, obviously. Many of us have met them. It's chilling. Now, what he did over the course of decades. This is not somebody who slipped and did this once or twice, but this is over the course of decades in what, to me, sounds like a genuine house of horrors. When you describe in your book what this doctor's office looked like, it sounds like something out of, just the kind of a movie that it gives you nightmares.
Yeah, I mean, he was always on the edge. I mean, he was involved in a thing called the Mother's Day Massacre in 1973, I think it was, before Roe, where women were mutilated, and he fled the Bahamas, came back, wasn't charged, wasn't suspended, and was allowed to keep killing. And I suppose it was political safe spaces that allowed him to keep killing. There was a and it was a Republican who started it. Tom Ridge was elected governor of Pennsylvania as a pro-choice moderate. Back when the conventional wisdom was you had to be a moderate to win Pennsylvania. Do you remember that, Eric?
I'm afraid I do. Yes, I do. Okay, I just found out that the Gosnell movie, about which we are now talking with Ann McElhenney and Phelim McAleer, that the screenplay was written by our friend Andrew Klavan. I did not realize that.
Andrew Klavan wrote the screenplay with myself and Phelim.
With Phelim. So, Phelim, you're not taking much...
With both of us, yes.
With the two of you, and I love that. I love Andrew Klavan, staff just told me that he was involved, and I just... He's tremendous.
That was deliberate, Eric. That was deliberate. I mean, we decided to make this a crime movie, because we wanted it to be very accessible to people. And Andrew is, first and foremost, a crime writer. We didn't want this to be a political screed. We didn't want it to be preachy or pedantic. We wanted it to be a crime movie. And at the end of the day, this man was a criminal. And Americans, watch a lot of crime on their television, Law and Order, FBI, all these programs, NCIS. So we wanted it to be in that genre so that it's accessible for Americans across the nation. And that's why we chose Andrew.
Well, as I say, I hope that churches across America will at least take their youth groups to see this, because we must teach our young people what is happening in America. The media, obviously, they're driven by the dollar. They care very little about truth. There's a lot of posturing, a lot of politically correct posturing. But when it comes to things like this, not only don't they care, they often actively look the other way. And I think that we, as parents and community leaders, have to take our young people to see this. It is absolutely vital that we show them what is happening in the United States of America and let them know that it's up to you to do something about this, that this cannot continue. And the fact that it continued as long as it did. How many years was he operating this House of Horrors, this Gosnell?
Well, 30 years. I mean, basically 30 years he's operating with impunity. And we know that 17 of those years, no one inspected the clinic. No one from the Department of Health decided to do that. And it's interesting just what you were saying there, Eric, about people need to know what's going on in the country. I mean, one of the parts of the film that we're most proud of and that we think is really important, and we certainly were very, very clear we wanted to have it in the screenplay, was, that during the actual trial of Kermit Gosnell, two abortion doctors were brought in because they needed to explain to the jury what a good legal abortion was so that they could distinguish between that and murder. And I can tell you, I have friends of mine who are in the medical profession, doctors, who comment on that particular section of the movie as educational to them, as they learned something they didn't know before. One dear friend of mine is an anesthetist, very highly qualified, has worked all over the United States of America and did not know. So this is why, exactly what you're saying, young people need to go because they're going to get an education. And it's, as I said, it's just like a Law and Order episode. You have this, abortion doctor on the stand being asked, can you describe a legal abortion to the jury? And I remember Phelim and I at the very, very beginning of this process said, whatever happens, that testimony will be in the movie script. It was very important to us because we believe no one has ever done that before in a movie. I think it's a complete first, and it's important. And no one can criticize it because it's basically stolen from the actual transcripts of the trial. It wasn't no original writing there. And it was so important to include that because, we don't have where else are you going to get that information in such an unbiased and unvarnished way? And I think it's quite shocking for people who hear it. Even people who think they know this subject, they'll be quite shocked to hear that.
Well, one thing we probably haven't said because we know the subject so well, and certainly both of you do. But what Gosnell did that makes him a serial killer, it's not just, of course, that he's doing very late term abortions, which are gruesome, but unfortunately quite legal in America. But he was also, because he made a lot of money off of killing children that were viable, obviously, and you describe that early on, but these children would often be born alive and he would murder them. And that is really why he is behind bars, is it not?
Yeah. I mean, he murdered babies born alive. He murdered his own patients, by the way, by allowing unregistered, unqualified staff to give them anesthesia. He also operated a pill mill. He's serving life sentences for selling opioids. He also did, the legal limit for abortion in Pennsylvania is an incredible 24 weeks, an incredible 24 weeks. Like, you know, 6 months, he was 6 months pregnant and have an abortion. However, that wasn't good enough for him. He did even later than that during the week. And then on a Sunday, he did abortion so late that he didn't trust any of the other members of staff to assist him. So him and his wife did what he called the special cases. Now, if he was doing 24 plus during the week, what was he doing at the weekend? No, you know, 9 months, 8 months, 9 months. That's what he was at.
And he knew nobody would prosecute him. He was quite confident that he could get away with this, obviously, with the liberal abortion climate in America, and especially in Pennsylvania.
And he was right. Yeah. He was right, because we know he was right, because we know, despite multiple complaints and lots of complaints, and in fact, they all, you know, these complaints came to light during the grand jury investigation. You know, despite all of it, no matter how bad things got, and obviously, I mean, it doesn't get much worse than two women dying, nothing would inspire the Department of Health in Pennsylvania to inspect the clinic. And, you know, that's another reason why people need to go and see this movie. If this can happen in Pennsylvania this century, not in some backwater, not in some other century, not in the back in the dark ages, this is now. This can happen now in Pennsylvania. It can happen where you live. Wherever you're listening, it can happen where you live. It can happen in Pennsylvania. You don't get more progressive than Pennsylvania.
No.
You don't get more progressive than the city of brotherly love, the sanctuary city of Philadelphia.
We're going to go to break. Folks, I'm asking you, please go to gosnellmovie.com. Please go to the movie. Please bring as many people as you can. This is an important moral issue of our time, and everyone in America must know about this, why I want everyone to see this film. But you're saying that Hollywood does not want this film to succeed. The media does not want this film to succeed. It's hard enough even to get people in conservative media to talk about this. So it's obviously important that the opening weekend, which is October 12th, that the opening weekend be a success.
Yes, it's very, very important. And people can, you know, can really, really help us by going out and buying tickets now if it's on in their local cinema. If it's not on in your local cinema, demand that get in touch with the manager, phone the manager. This is what people are doing across the country. They're phoning up the manager of the local cinema, and those messages are going back to corporate, and those corporate headquarters are saying, we need to get this film into theater, because no one's phoning up for any other movie that's coming our way. It's very, very important that we have this huge weekend. As Phelan, I think, said, you know, it becomes a news story. If we're the number two, the number three film, the number one film, by the way, of the weekend, you know, it's very, very important. We need your help. And, you know, another thing people can do is they can go to group@gosnellmovie.com. They can write to group@gosnellmovie.com and buy group tickets. You can, you know, and we have somebody who's there ready to help you do that and get in touch with a theater near you and to do that. And we have people doing buyouts of cinemas, you know, pregnancy centers and pro-life groups across the country who are doing that, and saying this is too important.
Well, I was just going to say that anybody who has a few bucks lying around, you can buy out a theater, or you can buy a block of 50 tickets or 100 tickets, and you can give it to the youth group or to the youth pastor and say, I have spent this money. Go take your kids to go see this. I mean, this is the kind of thing we need to be activists. We always complain about the garbage that is being put in theaters and that our kids are being exposed to absolute garbage, and worse than garbage, foul propaganda in many cases, really evil propaganda. And when we have something that we can do about it, we'd better do it. So I want to say to folks listening, folks, you better step up. If you're upset with the kind of thing that's being presented by Hollywood, if you're upset with the way the country is going, you really have to step up. You have to be an activist. You have to take action. You have to put your money where your mouth is. I say that just because our kids are at stake. The future is at stake. We cannot continue living in a country that allows this kind of thing to go on. But unless we help to tell the story, you don't make a movie in a vacuum. People have to go see the movie. So I am hoping that people listening now will go to gosnellmovie.com, buy tickets, take your neighbors, take your friends. This is important, folks. You hear it in my voice. This is the moral issue of our time. Anne McElhenney and Phelim McAleer, congratulations to you on what you've done. And I pray that God uses this movie to move the hearts of this country. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Eric. We really appreciate it, Eric.
God bless you. You've done an amazing thing here. Folks, please check it out, gosnellmovie.com. We are the Eric Metaxas Show, metaxastalk.com. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Your freedom is under attack. But if you act now, you can protect not only your family, but generations to come. Go to ChristianOutlook.com and to find out how you can join Alliance Defending Freedom to help ensure that the opponents of freedom don't dictate your future. That's ChristianOutlook.com. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.